Yeah, constraints provide focus. And I think that's one thing that a lot of creatives, a lot of people in general, we don't have innately. Like, we need to force ourselves to like sit down and focus and get shit done.
Welcome back to another episode of the Kobe Blankson podcast. Today, my guest is my good friend, Vineeth. Vineeth is a marketer, photographer, designer, writer, and an all-around creative badass. Today, we had an awesome conversation where we talked about simplicity, creative constraints, how to take negative feedback, and how to be more personable. And we also touched a little bit about diets because, you know, I'm always about my diets and trying new shit. And hey, he happened to be doing the same thing. So please enjoy the podcast, enjoy the content. And if you happen to have a minute or two and you like the content, leave a review on Apple Podcasts and give it a share. Maybe someone might learn from it as much as you did, or maybe someone might enjoy it as much as you did. So without further ado, let's cue that intro and get right to the podcast. Welcome to the Kobe Blankson podcast, a podcast about exploring people's passions and perspectives through meaningful conversations. Join me as I sit down with creators, friends, and professionals to talk about their process, discuss new ideas, life experiences, lessons they have learned, and how to live a more fulfilling life.
Plug your SD card in. It's like SD card corrupt, cannot be read by.
Oh, I was at home 2 days ago and I would put in my external hard drive and all of a sudden it just goes, can't be read.
Yeah. Like, oh man, that's like, the worst.
No. Please read for 5 minutes. Yeah. I just need one thing.
You just need to be able to back it up. Yeah.
And now I have to get a second drive.
Yeah.
I have to.
I think, yeah, you definitely got to. You never know, man.
Do you have two?
Yeah, I have two. I got three, actually.
Is it like one really big one, like a 4 terabyte, and then like two like smaller, like a
terabyte? So I have 1 2 terabyte, I have 2 2 terabytes.
Yeah.
And then the third one is just like 750 gigs. But that third one I use for, I like formatted it a different way so that it can be plugged into my TV. So I can just like watch movies and shit on there.
Oh. Yeah.
But the two that I use, it's like, that's my like go-to drive, and it's like the backup of the go-to drive.
Do you use a cloud as well to like back up any of the...
I don't trust the cloud.
Me neither, but yeah, like I like to put the cloud for things like if I have logos or if I have like any notes or anything, I can live with putting that on the cloud.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I'm not putting original copies on the cloud.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Because all of a sudden, I don't know if Google's going to be like, okay, we're going to charge services for the cloud. You can't get that until you pay like $59.99.
Yeah, it's like Western Digital Cloud, right, I think? WD Cloud, yeah.
Yeah, and I think Dropbox, I think, does that now.
Yep.
Like you only get 5 gigs now.
Yep.
And then you have to pay.
You have to pay, yeah.
Do you like Dropbox? I hate Dropbox.
Yeah, I like Dropbox. I like Google Drive, though, because it's more integrated with everything else.
Exactly.
Everything else I use. But I like Dropbox as a
ecosystem.
Company.
Ecosystem.
Yeah.
Ecosystem.
It's ecosystem. Everyone's getting to the ecosystem.
I think that they figured it out, and I tried to go against the ecosystem, per se. Like, I had the Android phone, Apple, everything else, and just because I liked Android phones.
Yeah. So,
but as soon as I got an actual, like, iPhone, I understood.
Interesting.
I understood, like, why everyone wants the exact same brand for everything. It's so easy to take a video that I edited, put it on my phone, share it to my mom.
Like exactly. AirDrop, right?
2 seconds.
AirDrop it, yeah.
AirDrop alone is enough for me to stay.
AirDrop and messaging on Mac. Messaging on Mac is huge.
That's like a plus and a minus because I get distracted sometimes now.
Oh, yeah.
So like, I'm like, fuck, group chat. Like, you just know your phone is going ding, 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 ding.
So I had to like put on silent.
Oh, man, the group chat's hot. The group chat stays hot.
I have like, what's your favorite group chat that you have?
I have a group chat with Carwan, Faison, Dennis, and it is Carwan's irrational confidence about the Toronto Raptors.
Interesting.
And, it's just Carwan getting mad and Dennis and I and Faison just aggravating him, and there's nothing better.
It's entertaining,
like,
eh?
Yeah. I was like, Carwan, you look like you're having a great day. He's like, yeah, I am. The Raptors suck. Fuck
you. Yo, how about you? For me, I guess I have this one group chat with like a bunch of like, you know, like Emily, Saeem, like three of us.
And the three amigos.
Yeah, three amigos.
Emily's next.
Three of us. And like, it's pretty cool because like we'll just, it's like very much like our IRL, like in real life hangouts and stuff where Like, for example, like I'll be editing a photo and I'll just like post in a group chat, then like we'll give each other feedback and stuff. But we talk about like so much more than just photography. Like we talk about like general creativity and about some like pretty wicked stuff. So yeah, the group, man, group chats, like
they push you.
Yeah, they really do push you, man. And yeah. Yo, shout out to
they push
that's,
you.
That's one thing that Apple has gotten right is just messaging. But I think Facebook is like Facebook's coming for the crown because Messenger is incredible. Like the fact that you can create events within like Messenger itself is its own platform, right? So you can create like events within Messenger and things like that.
You're 1,000% right because my aunt, she wanted me to go somewhere, and she told me the time, and then I look at the, I'm like, can I press that? And I click it, and it goes right to my calendar, and just sets it. I'm like, huh. And I think the Google Assistant is getting close to that.
Yeah.
They're doing something similar to that. And but Google just needs to make a Google Chat, which they already have.
Yeah, they have Allo, they have.
And just make it a Messenger. You'll get so many people.
Yeah.
So many people.
It's crazy to think that something like Facebook, which is like relatively new when you compare it to like Apple and and Google, like they're still like relatively new when you compare to them, but that they've been able to figure out something as complex as messaging. And it seems so simple, right? It's like just have one single app and make it do everything versus like Google has, and this is like kind of like Google's strategy a little bit, is they have like, essentially they have four different messaging apps. They have Google Hangouts. Allo, Google Hangouts, Google Voice, and then Gtalk. So they have like four different messaging apps.
What's Gtalk?
Gtalk is basically, let's say you have a Google phone as well.
Yeah.
It's almost like iMessage, but specifically for just like between Android to Android.
Oh, not specifically Google Pixel to Google Pixel?
Yeah, it's not Google Pixel, oh, yeah.
I never saw that.
And then Hangouts is for like any platform. Allo is for, I think the main confusion is between like Allo and Hangouts.
Yeah. They were the same to me.
Yeah.
So I just
didn't. It's like different UIs.
I didn't use either of them.
Yeah, exactly. there's no real point.
Is this, you don't know if it's for you or not.
Exactly.
And that's what Apple's mastered that.
Yeah, it's just the art of simplicity, man.
It's just so simple. It's like a minimalist vibe.
Yeah, don't make people think. That's one thing that Steve Jobs is like, don't make people think. But that can work for you or against you in a way, right?
Yeah, you're right. Because now if Apple ever tried to like make things anything like a bit more complicated or just even if they innovate too much, backlash.
And exactly, yeah.
That's why you have like 6S. Seven.
Yep. And like, and
so small little changes.
A lot of people like simplicity can only get you so far, or people feel too constrained by simplicity, right? Like stifled almost to the point where they're like, I wish my phone did this, or I wish my app did this.
That's what made me leave from a 5 over to Android.
Yeah, exactly. Just, and then Android just it's too much.
It's
too much, you know what I mean?
You could do anything.
You
could
do anything you want with it.
We haven't even introduced you, so introduce yourself, Vineet. Let the people know who you are.
So my name is Vineet. I'm a marketer, photographer, designer. I read a lot of books. I'm starting to get back into writing. I take a lot of photos. I watch a lot of movies. I guess I'm just like an overall like creative person, I guess. And I'm confident when I say like I'm a creative person because a lot of my friends and people around me say I'm creative, so I'm allowed to say that. So.
You're only allowed to say it once at least like 5 to 10 of your
friends. Yeah, exactly. Otherwise you're just cocky and it's like he's not creative.
That's like when your mom gives you a compliment and you're like, yeah, whatever. And then like your friends say it, you're like,
yeah, exactly. You start to take notice.
So you mentioned something about constraints just a second ago. And we were talking earlier before the podcast, before we did three versions of this while my equipment was going crazy.
Yeah, man.
But
we got to figure it out.
Guys.
We got to figure it out.
What we were talking about was hot. We should get back into that.
It was hot. Yeah.
But you're talking about constraints. And we were talking about how, as a creative person, constraints can be a great thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think just for creative people. I think just in general, constraints bring out the best in people.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
I think we as human beings, like we have like such powerful minds, like such an overactive brain, that we don't know when to stop and put a lot of things into writing or when to stop and create. Like we focus a lot on the planning and like the thinking stage of things. So I think constraints help you in terms of determining like, okay, now's the time I can start, or like now's the time that I should actually like be creating and like move away from the thinking process. A great example of this is Get Out. So like the movie Get Out, the producer of it.
Love it.
Yeah, Blumhouse.
Yeah.
So he this producer, like, he has like a very, very specific formula for how he he wants the movies that he produces to be created. And he says it has to be under a certain budget. I don't know the exact number, but let's say it's like a $10 million budget.
Okay.
So it has to be less than $10 million of budget. There can't be more than 3 different locations. And you should primarily have a maximum of like 5 primary characters. Like, that's it. And that's...
Wow.
Yeah. So he places like these constraints upon himself and upon like creative people.
Yeah.
And obviously like a lot of the movies that he's produced, like they haven't done a whole like super successful. But when you look at something like Get Out, like... The reason why like Get Out was so successful and everything is, you know, Jordan Peele, like super very creative guy. He had like a ton of constraints put towards him. But the way that Blumhouse specifically treats his productions, like his movies, is they're all investments. So he treats it like any VC company where he will invest, you know, like $5 million here, $5 million there, $5 million there. And out of like three movies, like if he were to put out like 17 movies in a year, he'll be happy if like 2 are profitable. Because he's making enough back on those 2 movies to recuperate the losses of the others.
As a creator, that's dope. Because you know, like, it's not, it doesn't come down to money.
Yeah,
you can focus on the art.
Exactly. Yeah, and you can focus on, because so many people, like from a as a film director, right? Like for example, like if you just think like, oh, well, I need to introduce this character so he does this. I need to introduce like another character so he can move the story along this way. Like, no, like if you have a constraint of like, okay, only like 5 lead characters, you're like, all these 5 characters have to contribute to the plot somehow. And I can't introduce like any other auxiliary characters to move the plot forward. So it's super important.
That's what makes, Ryan Coogler, the director of Black Panther, so great. If you look at some of the early movies like Fruitvale Station.
Yeah, Fruitvale Station. Yeah.
Like it's about his character depth. And I'm not even a person who really like analyzes movies. Yeah, but I'm always like, I knew a lot about that character in a short amount of time. It was almost like a TV show.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, and to be able to do that much character depth, and I think that's why Killmonger really like resonated with people. You got to know his backstory. You got to know him well.
Exactly.
In 2 hours, so people are like, oh, Killmonger is my guy. We go back 10 years, but it was really 2 hours.
Exactly. Yeah.
And less than that, if you want to consider the full like totality of the movie.
Yeah, constraints provide focus.
100%.
And I think that's one thing that a lot of creatives, a lot of people in general, we don't have innately. Like, we need to force ourselves to like sit down and focus and get shit done.
That's
you know what I mean.
When I was at work, I think it was like a year and a half ago. We had like this this trainer come in and kind of show us how teamwork works and how different personalities and people learn differently.
Yeah,
and he shows us, you know, like those photos where. It's just like paint and black ink on a
white like Rorschach test.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So he puts it up on the board and there's no box around it, right? So everyone's looking at it. He's like, "What is it? What is this?"
Mm-hmm.
And nobody can see it. One person goes, "Oh, it's a cow."
Yeah.
And he goes, "Why? How did you see it was a cow?" And then she goes, "I just put my fingers in a box over the image, and then you can see that it forms into a cow." And then the next photo, obviously, he puts it into a box and it's a cow and everyone can see
it. Yeah.
And it's the constraint, right?
Exactly.
Everyone can see what's there when it's constrained. So you're definitely right. It puts things into focus. It allows people to be creative.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, your Instagram.
Yeah.
Your Instagram is something that changes all the time. Like
you
almost go through like seasonal themes.
I have ADD when it comes to my Instagram.
Yeah. I've probably followed you on Instagram for probably 4 or 5 years now.
Yeah.
And if I see in 1 month, it'll be this. And if I don't see any image from you in like maybe 3 or 4 weeks, I'm like, oh, something big's going to change. And tell me about your Instagram. If any, like we'll plug all your stuff at the end. But like,
tell me,
what are you thinking when you make your Instagram? Because right now it's like it's the apostrophes down
yeah, it's side. Like the quotes, yeah,
yeah,
the everything quotes, quotes
and then everything, which is kind of like a play on
it's words. Like, yeah, it's like Virgil. It's inspired, stolen essentially from Virgil Abloh, who's like the creative director behind Off-White and now Louis Vuitton.
Okay,
but basically, I want to make sure, like, anything I put online or, like, out into the world, I want to manage and make sure it's, like, conveying something. And I used to, like, do a lot of things just because I was like, oh, like, it looks cool. But I've learned that there's a balance between having something aesthetically pleasing but also providing substance.
Yeah.
So with the whole, like, everything in quotes thing is I want to be able to give people the idea that this is just kind of, like, I'm just adding meaning to the photos that I'm choosing to put out into the world. So one thing is whenever I edit a photo, I tend to kind of like add like my own little spin on it. So for a while, like I'm very intrigued by symmetry.
Yeah.
So for a while, like a lot of my photos would highlight like symmetry, and I would purposefully make them symmetrical like through my post-process editing.
I remember that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like when I would like travel to Europe and stuff, like a lot of my photos like had that forced symmetry and forced perspective. But as I started like, you know, getting more into photography and stuff, like I started to realize like it's less about like editing is super important, but there's a certain art and like skill towards like the actual like shot that you take. So now like I'm really pursuing more like abstract and like different focuses when it comes to shooting photos. So for example, I want to say maybe like a month and a half or 2 months ago, Saeem and I, like a friend of mine, a photographer in Toronto, we were out in Graffiti Alley in Toronto, like shooting. And this like group of like high school kids like show up, and one of them was wearing some off-white kicks. So I took a couple of photos of it. There was like one really sick photo that stood out in my mind because he was standing right in front of a puddle, and I was able to capture like the reflection of those shoes, like crisp clear. Like it, like people said like, oh, it was Photoshopped. Like, yeah. And I was like, nah, man, like that's the puddle.
That's
the reflection.
Photo. Yeah.
So with that, like, I guess the quotes just kind of say like, this is what I'm kind of like putting out to the world. And this mm-hmm. is the meaning mm-hmm. that I have, mm-hmm. but you're going to have like a different meaning. You're going to put something else into those quotes.
It's just like reading a book.
Yeah. Right? Essentially.
So
yeah.
if you have, for example, Barack Obama with a quoted phrase in a text, that's what you want to focus on.
Exactly. Like, yeah.
This is the objective of the whole story.
And it just looks really cool too.
Yeah. It just looks dope.
It just looks pretty cool. Yeah.
Your editing style is something that I find like very unique amongst the people that I follow.
Thank you.
Like I know it's a Vineeth photo without having to look at your handle.
Yeah.
Like, if Sam just scrolling quickly, I know it's yours.
And
that matters.
Yeah. Trademark, right?
Yeah. Like, it's a signature. It's just like Saeem starting to develop a signature.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and that comes from moving to Toronto. I think you guys pushed it. Like you're pushing it more.
Yeah.
More.
I think Toronto, like, I want to say like less of the actual, moving to Toronto, but being surrounded by the creative people was like really, really big.
Yeah.
Because I was still doing a lot of this stuff in Ottawa. Sam was still doing a lot of this stuff in Ottawa as well. But it's just about being able to surround yourself around like that creative energy mm-hmm. and like those people. Because one thing that, and I'm not saying like Ottawa, to say the word right now, like does a bad job at it. But one thing that's really cool about Toronto is it's plagued with creatives from like different mediums, like whether it's writers, whether it's like filmmakers, film editors. I know a lot of like really talented, just like cinematographers, right? Yeah. Like people who don't even like direct or write stories like for film, but they're like directors of photography or mm-hmm. they're like cinematographers, and everyone's a creative in their own way.
Yeah.
And like even you yourself, like with the podcast, right? Like the way like you handle the technique and stuff. So I think like that's one thing that's really helped is just being able to surround yourself around like a creative tribe really pushes you.
Yeah.
And I think everyone's creative in their own way, but if you're able to kind of like bring that out into the world, then you understand that you have an effect on someone else's creativity in a way as well.
Yeah.
So.
I didn't mean to like you guys weren't doing it here. It was more like, I feel like because I've known you guys for a while, I can see the growth.
Yeah, exactly.
It's almost like Ottawa was high school and now you're like,
It has accelerated.
You see what I mean? It accelerates. And
yeah.
It's just like a person who goes from college to the NBA.
Exactly. Yeah.
The better players around you, you're going to get better.
Exactly.
And you don't even notice it sometimes until you go back down.
And that's,
you're like, oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a cool thing. So like I'll look back at photos I've taken like years ago and I'll be like, oh man, like I thought like this was a shit way back. Like here's what I changed. But I think that's like a really humbling thing is to look at past decisions with new information.
I like that.
But it's like, you don't want to fixate on that the whole time because it kind of like stifles you in a way, right?
Yeah.
So the important thing is to take that new information and create something new from it versus trying to improve your past decisions, because that's just the past. Like, and it's stuck there.
Mm-hmm,
you know what I mean? So.
Yeah. Like, I was reading one of your Medium posts and you kind of had this gripe with the people who just create and put out.
Yeah.
And you kind of talked about it a little bit just in the last second over there, how people kind of get held up on perfection.
Yeah, so it's...
Or
it's,
the opposite.
Yeah, so I know what you're talking about. So essentially the idea is there's... So I've been lucky to work in a few startups, like from a professional standpoint, like whether it's, whether I was in like university and as well like post-grad, like after graduation, like I worked in startups. And there's like a very famous phrase, which is done is better than perfect.
Yeah.
And I've always hated that phrase. I'm not a fan of that phrase.
I loved it at one point.
Yeah, exactly. And it makes, like, I'm not going to lie, it does make sense. But I think for creatives specifically, I think it makes you feel rushed, or it almost like says mediocrity or laziness is, or not laziness, but like mediocrity is okay. Yeah. And it's okay to rush things. And I think the great thing about creatives is that we always like to take our time, not necessarily perfecting things, but creating quality. And I think time is like really, really important for quality. Mm-hmm. So, as opposed to making something and then being like, meh, it could be better, but I'll just put it out there. I think it's important that you ship it and then you make it better.
Okay.
So that is essentially like shipping is the idea of, just a bit like building, like putting something out there. And then I threw on the little tidbit about like, making it better, because when it comes down to it, like everything is a work in progress. So, the work is never done. Like the work is never complete. Like, you're always like continually trying to get better. You're always trying to like perfect or pursue progress and like progress in your craft and everything.
I think it's because as creatives, we think everything that we're gonna put out in the world is the whole image of our life story.
Yeah,
and really, it's just a snapshot.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
like
taking like blood work, and it's like, no, this is where you were at the time.
Yeah.
But if you improve, you go exercise, you go do your thing, you come back, well, it's going to improve.
Exactly, yeah.
What I liked about that saying prior was it allowed me to, because I was a perfectionist.
Yeah, yeah.
That's because I worked in finance, where you have to be, you have to.
Yeah, you have to. Because like every penny's got to be accounted for, right?
Exactly. And then when I was trying to do my creative thing on the side, especially starting with the podcast initially, it was like, okay, well, the audio is crap. We can't send this out. We can't put this out. This is terrible. And then my friend's like, no, like the story behind it is great. Like the things we're saying is great. You might not be able to hear it as well, but it's great.
Yeah.
And initially I didn't want to put it out. And then I was like, okay, let's do other ones first. And then we can put it out later as like specials.
Yeah.
And we did. And some people like those more than the ones that actually
and the first ones, yeah, yeah,
because at the end of the day, the story being told or just the content,
yeah, the content was better. Presence. Yeah,
I was stressing over it, so that's where that saying really like allowed me to get the ball rolling.
Yeah,
but I think once you get started, now you have to. It's like making a mistake over and over again.
Exactly.
Eventually, you can't just make a mistake over and over again. That's insanity.
Yeah,
you have to improve and add little things.
Exactly, and you guys. And feedback is like a huge thing for that too. Like you always have to get feedback, right?
Yeah,
whether it's from your audience or whether it's from your peers.
Yeah.
I think feedback is a huge gift, and a lot of people don't know how to take feedback, which kind of sucks.
It's tough. Where do you think you learned it?
Honestly, I've always been, I'm not gonna lie, like I've always been like pretty conscientious and like self-conscious. Mm-hmm. So I've just naturally been always like, oh, like what do you think of this? And then someone will tell me, I'm like, all right, well I'll go back and make it better, but. I think ultimately I've learned just a lot from just genuinely, like, honestly, like reading like books about feedback and just understanding that at the end of the day, like if you surround yourself around like the right people, they're going to want you to get better. They're going to want you to win and stuff too. So I'm very lucky to have people that I can ask feedback for that. Yeah. I know it's coming from like a place of like general improvement and not like they're just trying to pull me down.
Yeah. In any way, so. Where do you find... Do you find it challenging to figure out if negative feedback it be given to you is because this might not actually be for you, or is it because they want you to improve? Because that's where I learned pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Like, okay, this just isn't for me. This isn't my strengths.
Yeah.
Roasted me on my writing, and then I just realized, oh yeah, writing isn't for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. The medium is great. Maybe it just might not be my thing. I'm gonna try something else.
Yeah.
And that's how I actually started podcasting after writing. Because I was like, I'm better at talking and portraying my message through speech than I am writing it down.
So it's like the idea of like, do you know when to quit?
Yeah, do you know when, it's tough to figure out.
Like, it is tough, yeah.
Is the feedback beneficial, but telling you to quit and try something else? Or is it telling you to pay more attention?
Yeah, and that's, I think if there's like two or three times where you're consistently like getting the same feedback, then you know it's like, all right, like this isn't for me.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, right? Like, but you do have to make sure like you're trying to proactively like improve versus just like doing the same thing, getting the same feedback. So I think for me, one of those things was I wouldn't say like it was necessarily like photography, because like at the time, like I was pretty lucky. Like I think I jumped on the photography like bandwagon like pretty early.
Oh, you were what?
So back
you,
in like
you started 9 years ago.
Yeah, so like 2010 was when I got my first DSLR.
Yeah.
So like, but there have been other endeavors I've tried where it's like I'm just like I kind of know when to quit, because at the end of the day, like as a creative, like you get such a joy, not just from the output, like what you created, but the process of creating.
It's the process.
And there have been things that with Under Endeavors where I'm like, oh, like I'm just doing it because I want to create something like really dope. And I'm like, it's not even that dope.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's actually creating something for someone else rather than for yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Right? So yeah. And that's, man, like that's one thing I see a lot of people like struggling with is they like put themselves through hell to like create something. And at the end of the day, they can't even like appreciate like what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, if you can't enjoy the process, like then it's really not worth it.
That was YouTube for me.
So yeah.
YouTube requires 10 minute video.
Yeah.
Takes so much editing and thought and cutting and so much actual like work. It would take me like a whole week and a half.
Yeah.
To really, like produce a 10 minute video that I liked, to the point where I was like, oh, I have to go edit this again. And I love editing. Like I love editing.
Yeah.
That's my joy. And once I started realizing, oh, it's making me hate editing.
Yeah, exactly.
Part,
yeah.
Which is the part I like. Then I'm like, this isn't for me. And then now I'm more focused on Instagram because I only have a minute.
Exactly. 15 seconds. So like you put a constraint on yourself,
exactly.
Right?
And which is it's really a constraint important. That I enjoy. And it's like, okay, for 15 seconds, this is fire. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to share this.
Exactly.
I like it. Not because I think it's going to be the thing that's going to get me thousands and thousands of views.
So why'd you choose YouTube? I'm like curious. Like what drew you to YouTube specifically?
Gary Vee always had this thing, you know Gary Vee, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. And he's kind of like, go where the audience's attention is.
Okay.
And first of all, I'm a big believer in like picking up skills.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I want to learn how to video edit it and I want to learn how to record, like film, just because I think it'd be useful. And so I just dove right into it. And YouTube was something where I have it broken down to thirds.
Okay.
It is the algorithm, your actual content, and then how can you market it? Like, so the marketing ties back to the algorithm.
Yeah.
And then your actual content. But if you, the way the algorithm and the marketing makes you think, it makes you mold your content.
So yeah,
you start, so now you're not actually doing what you want to do. You're doing what you want to, you're doing what's going to get
exactly.
Noticed on the algorithm.
Stuff, yeah.
And that really irritated me after a while. I'm like, I actually don't want to do this video.
Yeah. You don't want to play by the rules.
Yeah. This wasn't what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. But I know what I wanted to do based off what you're telling me from this algorithm and how other videos do well. It's not going to do well. And now I'm doing 10 days for like 2 views. And I'm like, I'd rather do this in 2 minutes and know it's for me.
Exactly.
The retention rate would be less than the algorithm says. Mm-hmm. But I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. It's good that you were self-aware.
Yeah.
With that, right? Yeah.
Self-awareness wasn't always there for me, but I have a very like ruthless mother. How it is.
Yo, yeah.
Everyone and then it kind of just gets like right in there. One thing that just to kind of change topics on, like you're a person that's very personable.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thanks, man.
You find it. I probably talked to you for maybe 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Like one time, like at school, like at a pre-drink before an outing. And like, now we just know each other. And
We talk
all the time. Where do you think you learned the ability to like be so personable? Is it something you practice?
No, I'm not going to lie, man. Like I've just always, when I was younger, like I was like a people pleaser. So like I would,
I think almost everyone is.
Yeah, everyone is. And I think that's something that's like stuck with me. But as I start to learn, like I could just be myself. And, like, I don't know, I try my best, like not to bullshit around or like beat around the bush or anything. So, one thing, that really did help out though, was I read a book called, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And to a certain extent, like that really, that drove down like a lot of points or that drove, like that had a lot of influence on me. So there's simple things in there, you know, just like being genuinely interested in what the other person has to say, asking open-ended questions when you talk to people, stating their name like more than once during conversations.
I struggle with that,
man. Yeah, it's tough, yeah. But it comes with practice, right? So things like that always stuck out to me, and you start to like practice those things, and then eventually like they just become natural. So I'm genuinely interested in what people are doing, and I try my best to ask like open-ended questions and things, and I've always heard like I'm a good listener, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. that like I guess like that's helped me become more personable. Mm-hmm. I'm also like pretty self-aware, but almost like to a fault, to the point where like I'm self-critical, I guess like just those things. So that book like really helped me in a huge way, but it's also just I think it's just like genuinely like I try not to be an asshole.
Yeah,
and like I just
yeah,
like I try like if I can do something like better for someone else, like fuck, like why wouldn't I try it?
It's so simple,
how right? Being exactly, nice
is pretty much 80% of the answer.
Yeah, exactly. Like just be nice. Like people are like, oh, well, I don't know what's right. Nice. Like it's just be empathetic and like be compassionate, right? And a lot of people like struggle with being empathetic and being compassionate, but to me, it's just like it's just putting yourself in the other person's shoes, or like trying to understand like how would they feel if like this happened, or how would it make them feel if like this were to happen. So I ask that a lot, and I tend to do for other people, you know. So
it's something that I had to work on.
Yeah, it's like, tough.
Yeah, I think people always perceived that I was an extrovert,
mm-hmm.
but like I think when you're growing up, you have extrovert kind of outbursts because you don't have to show your full personality.
Yeah,
right. Because if I behave like this, and they don't really know who I really am.
Yeah, they get surface level Kobe. Yeah, right?
They might not accept that portion of me.
Yeah,
and then the more I started reading, because I've become a big reader too.
Yeah, yeah.
And
so
like you start learning from other people's mistakes, and I started exactly. applying it. So you know Mark Manson, he wrote So his blog posts will really like train me to like get out of my skin, like, and show the real me.
Yeah.
So like there was a period where I just deleted all social media.
Interesting.
I was, like, okay. I have to learn how to talk to people.
Yeah, yeah.
If I can't learn how to talk to people, then I'm going to be fake even on this platform.
Yep.
Right. So if I deleted that. So for 9 months I went black, no social awesome. Media. And I had to, if I was on the elevator at work, I had to talk to a person.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had to ask 3 questions. I had to share a story that was like legit and showed vulnerability. And
vulnerability is a huge thing.
Yeah. That one took a couple months.
Yeah.
And then eventually you just kind of become a better people person.
You do, yeah. You become more genuine, like, well, not even just like a people person, but like you become more genuine and like more real with yourself, right? Like
mm-hmm.
people like seeing the real version of you versus like some made up always perfect or always on like their best behavior version, right? And I think like a big thing for this too is you start to like see like where the real relationships are in your life,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
you start to show those people like your genuine self, your authentic self,
yeah.
And being vulnerable just strengthens those relationships in a way, right? Because if you're not able to be weak in front of someone, like how can you expect to be strong? And vulnerability is a strength. I think being vulnerable is a huge strength. It's hard to be vulnerable, man.
Yeah,
it's hard to be vulnerable.
What vulnerability opened up for me was it allowed me to fully trust people.
Yeah, exactly.
If I'm vulnerable in front of you, it's me saying, I trust you.
Yes, that's huge.
You're not going to take whatever I tell you. You're not going to take this moment from me and use it to against me or to exploit me.
Exactly, yeah.
And when you finally realize that, oh, it's a weight off the
shoulders. Yo, it's liberating.
It's
hella liberating, yeah.
Like, it made my relationship actually possible for me. Like,
that's amazing.
To, like, get in a relationship
and
be okay with it. I was able to, like, really, like, make my friendship circles kind of smaller.
Yeah.
I didn't have 1,000 like kind of friends.
Yep.
I had like 20 like
these good friends. Exactly. That's your tribe. You it's your circle. I mean? Yeah. Yeah.
Did you read the book Tribe by Sebastian Younger?
No.
I feel like you're using the tribe a lot.
No, one of my friends, like, she says tribe, like, she's like, oh, thanks for being part of my tribe. Or
it's important. Like,
yeah,
that's what people do actually. Like we, in any sort of cause, we try to find a tribe because it helps lift us.
Yep.
Right?
That's so true.
If you're seeing right now, YouTubers kind of have their own like YouTube tribe.
Yeah.
Like they're big on the platform. They're big about content creators doing their own thing
yep.
to break away from Hollywood's like strict kind of rules.
Yeah.
It's the same thing in music with SoundCloud. It's the same thing with, on Instagram with photographers.
Yeah.
Like everybody has their tribe.
Like their own tribe. Yeah.
Like, don't mess with the vegan tribe. You'll
yeah,
lose
do not. don't fuck with the vegans, man. There was this, actually, there was this, a couple weeks ago in Toronto, there was this, like, these protesters, like, these vegans were protesting outside outside of a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And the owner actually came up by the window and just started, like, cutting meat, like, right in front of
no.
them. Yeah. And that was great publicity because the guy ended up, he went viral. Like, there were tons of articles about him.
Yeah.
And, like, the restaurant's been, like, booked up. So.
Wow. It flipped the other way.
Yeah.
Flipped,
yo, that's, like, that's obstacles the way right there.
Have you ever tried being a vegan?
No, I'm not going to try. Like, I'm doing keto right now. And even then, like, yes. I'm failing
no.
miserably. Like, I think, like, 2 weeks ago, I had, like, pasta.
Yeah.
And, like, I felt sick. So, like, that's good because that sends me a signal that, like, oh, I should stay off. I should legitimately stay off carbs. Like, I should.
Dude, you're speaking my language.
Yeah.
So I did vegan for 6 months. 6 months. I was vegan, vegetarian.
Yeah.
I kept a little bit of fish every now and then.
Okay, so pescatarian. Yeah.
And then I did it initially because it kind of, it reduced inflammation and would help me like, recover. And then, but as soon as I got a trainer, he was just kicking my ass. Like,
interesting.
Kicking my ass. And I couldn't recover at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
So like the strain on my muscles, I just get extremely
tired. You needed like more protein and stuff.
I needed
more
protein. I needed amino acids more than just the supplements. It just wasn't happening for me. So I was like, okay, as much as I still stand by their beliefs. I believe like animal cruelty is wrong and all that stuff. I'm going to add a little bit of meat. And then I switched over to keto.
Uh-huh.
So I do keto because you don't have to have crazy amounts of meat.
Yeah, you don't.
It's the fats.
Yeah, it's the fats, exactly.
But
yeah.
I still get the benefits of like recovery.
Yeah.
So it's my little thing. But yesterday I ate carbs for the first time and I died.
Yeah. Like it's crazy how like as we get older, you know, I'm 25. Are you 25?
25.
Yeah, you're 25, right? As you turn 25, like your whole body just like, it changes like so drastically. And like you stop eating. Like I haven't eaten, like before those 2 weeks, I didn't eat pasta for like 3 weeks. And then I had like that
3 weeks, no pasta. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you, man.
Most people, but, that's...
Yeah, that one bit. And I was like, yo, I was donezo. Like, I was in a rough shape. But it's things like that are like really important. I'm starting to realize like...
What made you like try keto? Is it simply just because of health or because...
Yeah,
like,
it's health. So I did keto before and it was like, it worked pretty well for me.
Yeah.
And I'm just back on it. But the old saying of, you know, you are what you eat is like, it's so true, man.
It's,
like
it's ridiculous how true it is.
Yeah. Like you really are what you put into your body. And like the more mindful of it you are, the better, because, I think there's like so much potential with the human body and like with humans in general. And it's not just about like how you look from like an aesthetic standpoint, but from like a mental standpoint, like what you eat, like drastically affects everything.
That's where keto has.
So, exactly. Yeah. Best.
Like I could You're be
more
focused.
Alert. Yep.
Do you do intermittent fasting with it, or do you?
I basically do. So I skip breakfast.
Okay. Yeah. It's the same thing. Yeah. I find it's so much easier with intermittent fasting.
Yeah, and I don't snack in between, so it's essentially the same. I eat like lunch at work, and then I eat dinner at home, and then it's basically intermittent fasting.
Yeah. I find the mental clarity that I get from it is just it's exactly what I need, and then when I get home, or then when I'm like doing work, or even just like listening to family and stuff like that. I'm just alert. Like,
yeah.
If I'm on my keto high, don't argue with me.
Yeah.
I'm ready. Like, you're I'm ready. I'm ready.
You got the
I'm
points.
Ready with the fat.
Kobe's got receipts. He's not afraid to show them.
It's like, oh, you thought this? No. It was this on this day. I'm ready.
Yeah.
So let's get off that health.
Because vitamin D supplements too, and B12, vitamin D and vitamin B12 supplements will actually do a lot for you too.
B12 is key. But I don't really know exactly how it helps in all the grand schemes. I just know B12 is necessary if you're going to reduce your meat.
Interesting. Oh, okay. Yeah. So for me, like I've just, so I have like massive vitamin D deficiency.
Okay.
And so does like most people of color, who live in North America do as well. Yeah. It's like when I got the blood test, and the doctor was like, you need like more vitamin D and vitamin B12.
Yeah.
But just like taking it, and I noticed like better energy, like better moods, like energy. I was like maintain my energy throughout the day and stuff too. So.
Okay, I thought vitamin D was just strictly with like because it's a melanin thing, right?
It so is, yeah. But because because we don't get a ton of sunlight in general, it's really important that we have like we need supplements for it because there's no other way, right?
Exactly. Our genetic makeup is where from the countries where
we're
from, and being Canada, where
we're not set for success.
It's just not there. So you're a big time person when it comes to travel, like all over your Medium.
Yeah.
I like the way your Medium set up, actually. It's like, it's a trip, but then it's words mixed with photos, and like,
yeah,
you,
man,
you can't just skip the photos because you won't know what's going
on. I'm forcing people to
paragraphs of the, I like that.
I'm forcing people to consume my photos one way or another.
So,
and the words.
Tell me about your Medium style. Like, where'd you get the idea?
I don't know. I've always been like a big fan of, like, I'm like a huge film buff.
Okay.
And one thing is, I love the idea of like subtitles on like movies. So I guess like that was like my main inspiration was just like those pictures convey a scene, and like I'm trying to explain the scene, but through not like such direct means, right? So for example, like in one post that I made when I was in Barcelona, like I said specifically, like, you know, there's no words I could capture my nights in Barcelona, so these photos will have to do. And that was it. Like, and there was like a couple other posts I made where the words essentially like describe the feel, like the feeling of the photo, not necessarily what's in the photo. And at the end of the day, like, I think that's one thing like a lot of photographers take for granted is words. Like, we focus so much on the photos that we forget about the words.
There's a reason why books have been around for millions of
years. They're not going anywhere.
They're not going away. It might change. We might get a Kindle instead of, but words will never, never go away.
And like Instagram captions too. Like, even if we're talking like from like complete, like modern perspective, I think Instagram captions are like super important from, like every, like most captions I do are like song lyrics, but like every now and then, like I'll sprinkle in like an original, like original quote or something. And it's intentional. Like, I don't just do it like off random. It's all intentional. So
I kind of have like, I struggle with Instagram captions because if I don't want a song lyric
necessarily,
because I find I'm more drawn to music from a production standpoint.
Interesting.
Okay. If I don't like a song, it's because I don't like
the beat. Okay.
That's like interesting. It's the beat. I know within the first 45 seconds
whether you're fucking with it or not. What are your top five beats, like off top?
If I were just go from like, I'll just go list off the artists and how like they resonate with
me. Sure.
So like there's an artist named LA.
E-L-H-A-E.
His production is always on point. When it's Drake, but it's Noah.
OVO 40.
When it's hit,
they have like a very distinctive sound.
There is this kind of, it's like alternative R&B kind of vibe that's going. It's like old Weekend.
But
like people are bringing it back and
there's
like a different twist to it.
There's you got like, there's one guy out there named HL. HL's pretty dope. I don't know if you've heard of him on Spotify. Like, he's pretty big on Spotify. HL, even Brent Fayaz.
I've never heard.
Oh, you got like a Brent Fayaz. And like Sonder. You know, like, you know Atlanta?
The show.
So Sonder and Brent Fayaz, like their songs have been used in like season two,
and so that exact thing. Atlanta is so good at having Childish Gambino just standing there, and then the song comes on. I'm like, that's the song for that moment. So when I'm thinking about your Medium post and how like the words perfectly describe the photo, when someone asks me like, why is Amsterdam your favorite city, I'm like, I can't exactly say why, but listen to this song and look at this photo. And I'm like, that's why
it's my favorite
city. It's the most beautiful city I found at night. And this song is the song I was listening looking at. Amsterdam. Amsterdam for me, special place in my heart.
It's the first place
I travel by myself.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And maybe that might be it because I travel by myself.
Yeah, it's true. You were able to really like take it all in. There's no outside influence, right? You had your own meaning to it.
Exactly. And the song... The song had nothing.
What song was it?
Kirk O'Bangs Came Here for Something.
Interesting. Oh, I never heard that song.
It's a 9-minute song.
Wow.
9-minute song, but the beat is my favorite beat of all time. I've listened to it on, you know how you could track on
your iTunes? The plays.
So on my old laptop, just before it died, I had 2,400 plays of the same. It's a 9-minute song.
It's a 9-minute song.
That's a big chunk of my life.
Yeah. You're looking at like 180, like 216,000 minutes.
Yeah.
Damn, that's crazy.
I just love it, like, cause I can. It's like background noise.
You just drown into it. So that's interesting you say that, cause like one thing I do at work to help, or even like editing to like help me focus and like be productive is I'll play like one song on loop.
I heard about that strategy. And I do it
cause you get into like a trance almost, right? So that's like pretty big.
There's like a style of jazz called acid jazz.
Interesting. Okay.
And it's kind of like a little bit of trap and jazz music.
Trap and jazz.
Yeah. Pretty cool. And I play that in the background. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. I can edit for hours. Like my legs are getting numb from sitting down for so long. I'm like, how long have I been sitting
here? You're just so caught up in
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Tumblr was that for me. When I separated from social media for a while, I came back.
Yeah.
I started with Tumblr. Because I was like,
Tumblr was a shit back in the day before Yahoo bought it.
Like, yeah.
And now all those reblogs.
Now it's kind of like porn, but like.
Yeah, that's all it is. Just GIFs.
Yeah.
It's porn GIFs, man.
But it was artists putting things that were up there.
Yeah, there were a lot of poets on Tumblr, a lot of poets, a lot of photographers. Yeah. When I first got into photography, like I was, like I would heavily browse Tumblr, and a lot of the people that I surround myself with were on Tumblr too. Mm. And there were like people were creating some incredible shit on Tumblr, man, like way back in the day.
I think Instagram can never recreate
Instagram that. Can never replicate that. And what's crazy about Tumblr too is it was social. Like there were people that I would like reblog or like talk to and like do the whole like Q&A thing.
Yeah.
Who lived in like, you know, like LA, who lived in like New York and shit like that. Like, and it's crazy that like you were actually connecting. Like it was social.
Yeah.
I find Instagram is not as social.
It's not. I don't think it is at all, to be honest.
Because a lot of these it's crazy, but like a lot of these creators have like 30, 40, 50,000 followers and they almost seem like they're hard to get a hold of in a way, right? Mm-hmm. But
surprisingly, I've been able to get in contact with a lot of creators by just shooting them a message. Like I wasn't even expecting
it. Oh, shit, that's pretty dope. Like,
let's see.
Yeah, what's the worst that could happen,
and
right?
And just shoot them a message. And like, I'd say 25% of the time, they get back to me. Like,
yeah.
And
I'm not hitting up enough people then. That's my problem.
Just shoot your shot.
Like, I shoot my shot.
Honestly, it works. But I think Instagram has a narcissistic kind of culture with it. Like you'll see people with like 150,000 followers and then they're following 153. It's like, okay, I know what this is for you.
Yeah. It's
because it's a business.
It is. Yo, Instagram is a business, man. Like influencers are all brought up on Instagram, right?
Yeah.
That's how the game is.
That's why it's never gonna like resonate with people like Tumblr.
Yeah. Oh, Tumblr was just Tumblr was a shit. You brought back some feels.
Yeah. Cause I get made fun of for having a Tumblr because at one point it was a shit, man. I was like,
people don't recognize like
you gotta have the Tumblr.
People were never up at like 2 a.m., 3 a.m. like listening to like Lupe Fiasco, The Cool, while browsing Tumblr, man. Like people were not like there was like some hot music came out like around the Tumblr days, like fucking Mike Posner, who else? This guy named XV, like all these like dope artists, like Mickey Facts. Yeah. There's all these like dope artists that came out around that time, man.
I love it.
Frank Ocean, man, when Frank Ocean like first came out, like people on Tumblr were just going crazy. Like when Nostalgia Ultra dropped in like a random
listen
day
to Novocaine and scroll through Tumblr.
Oh yeah,
it's a different album.
Yeah,
and that's what I love about music. Like I've fallen off of music a lot because of podcasts.
Yeah,
I'm just always listening to podcasts.
Yeah.
But when I do listen to music, the way it makes me feel when I'm doing in some sort of acts, I'm like, oh, this is right for this.
That's the shit. Yeah,
yeah. I do a lot of stretching.
Okay, interesting.
To music. So Frank, I'll listen to Frank Ocean and stretch because like. I feel like when I'm trying to stretch, I need to stay within myself.
Yeah,
if I really want to like
that second part of Nights, I can only imagine how good it is.
Like
as soon as like the beat switches, I can only imagine what that's like for stretching.
Yes, and I think that's what the music and yoga is meant for.
Yeah, it's like very revitalizing.
They need
stuff.
To change that to some Frank Ocean. I'm telling you, yoga memberships would be $250 bucks a month instead of 180 right now. So, what are your plans for like moving forward? Do you think, you're going to kind of double down on Instagram? Do you think you're going to change more towards Medium because you're kind of having this passion with the written word on top of your images? Like, what are your plans moving forward?
Yeah, I definitely want to double down on Medium a lot more.
Yeah.
I think Instagram's like cool. Like, I'm always going to be on Instagram and everything, but it's, I'm always a person who has tried to like stay away from the pack and like try to be different in a way, just because I'm like, oh, like I hate groupthink and all that shit. And that's one like I think I want to like be able to separate myself and like find like my own unique way of connecting with people and showcasing my art. And I think for right now, like Medium is that way, because a lot of people just use Medium to write.
Yeah.
But if I can use Medium to showcase my photos and write, I think that's like a pretty good mix of two things that I'm passionate about. Because I used to write a lot back in the day and then I stopped for like a long time.
What made you stop?
Oh man, honestly, like I'd say like when I got my camera.
Okay.
It's yeah, because like I used to write like short stories just for fun.
Nice, nice. Yeah. It's just like a different approach.
It is. It was different because like I would just have all these like ideas in my head,
yeah.
And I would like try to like put it on paper, and that was like writing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're very lucky nowadays to live in an age where creating isn't seen as an exception, but it's seen as like a norm.
Yeah.
So especially like people, like you can make money for creating like now, like it's crazy.
If you really like care about the art, which I think you do, and mm-hmm. I think your Instagram is a perfect example of it.
Oh, thanks, man.
You work in marketing. If you wanted to have more following, you get it. You would have more following.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like Instagram for you is about the art.
It is. Yeah.
So if you focus on that art. And people respect it. And you don't have to have a lot of people. You just have to have the right person.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's what matters.
Yeah. I think a lot of people do, which is like, I'm not talking anyone down, but like, I think a lot of people do art or like create for the gratification or like the validation, which is fine. Like, I completely understand that. It's like very important to your identity. For me, it's like, I do it a lot because I want to like put, like express this internalized feeling or like this internalized thought out into the world.
Yeah.
And it could resonate with one person or it could resonate with 500 people. It's all the same to me, man.
Exactly.
It's all the same at the end of the day.
That's what I try to use when I try to explain it to my parents, like why I podcast.
Yeah.
Because my parents are immigrants. They have this mentality that you're supposed to go to school, you're supposed to get a good job, and then that's it.
Yeah. Like, doctor, lawyer, engineer, one of those three.
Don't waste your time on creative things. And I said, well, the reason why I do it is not for other people. It's not even for money.
Yeah.
I'm actually like learning every single time I do something. Like if I have a conversation with you, I'm learning something new every single mm-hmm. time. Just if I'm trying to research or prepare for the podcast, I'm learning something new.
Exactly. Yeah.
Whether it is how audio should sound. That's a small thing that I can use.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know, where was I going from this? It just works. If you just kind of just focus on the art, everything kind of just
falls into place,
naturally happens.
Like if you focus on the process, essentially,
Joel Embiid said it right. Joel Embiid made the process hot. Like Philadelphia 76ers, trust the process.
Trust the process, man.
Just trust the process. I was reading one of your Medium posts, and it talked about how you like to travel minimal. Are you a minimalist? Do you follow that?
I'm not a minimalist at all.
Not at all.
No, I'm when I travel, like I think that's one thing, because I'm like, oh, I don't want to do like a ton of laundry and stuff. Mm-hmm. Or sorry, like I don't want to like carry a whole lot, so like that's fine. But like in terms of like other places, I'm not like I suck. I try to be a minimalist. I'm not like I consume way too much.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to be more mindful though of the things that I do spend money on and the things that I do consume and stuff, just because I know it's all about like consuming less and like experiencing more.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a minimalist, and I'm not afraid to admit that either.
If you were to be a minimalist, where would you start?
I think Oh man, that's a good question.
Right.
If I were a minimalist, where would I start? I think because of my self-diagnosed like ADD, I try to do everything at once. So like for example, like even this morning, like I was like, oh, there were like three books that I wanted to read, and I was like, hey, well, I'll read like 20 pages of this book, and I'll read like 10 pages of that book, and I'll read 10 pages of that book. And as I got into reading like the 20 pages of the first book, I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna stick to this one book. So yeah. I think it's ultimately just like trying not to do everything at once, trying like just basically be more focused, I think is like a really big, and I think that's what minimalism is. It's just focus, like focus on
that's
the right things, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Cause I wouldn't say that I am a minimalist compared to like what other people like perceive mm-hmm. minimalist to be. So I think people perceive minimalist having like seven things
in exactly,
the empty house. But like the things that I have in it that are of my possessions, I use.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So like I use every single thing. There's not one thing that I don't use regularly.
Yeah. And that's actually like a really interesting point, because I guess like for me, maybe I am a minimalist in the way that everything I have like kind of works together, like speaks to itself in a way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like I don't just have like stray shit like,
yeah,
just sitting around. It's like something I haven't picked up in like 2 weeks or whatever.
Like imagine how many people have like clothes that they actually don't wear.
Oh yeah, I actively like throw all my old shit away and give to like Salvation Army or something. You know what I mean? There's a really good practice, actually. It's like the art of tidying.
Okay.
I think, or like the mindful art of tidying. And
is that when people say that when you wake up, first thing you do is like make your bed, clean your room and everything, and it kind of just allows you to
clear. Yeah, kind of. It's more so like, I guess like that's a portion of it. I don't know the full concept, but the main thing that I know is you basically like in the process of cleaning and tidying up, you put everything you own like on the ground.
Okay.
And then you hold it for like 3 seconds or like 10 seconds or something. And you ask yourself, like, does this bring me happiness? Like, does it bring joy or value? Like, is there any sort of intrinsic value to it? And if it's no, then you discard it.
Okay. So, yeah. Okay. That's almost what my minimalist process was.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
And I was only able to kind of like become a minimalist when I got a place that was too big for me.
Yeah.
Because then you start kind of filling it because
you're it's like, too big. It's empty here. Yeah. I need to fill it up, but you don't really need to.
I never stand in that corner of the house, let alone use the things that are there.
Yeah.
And then I was kind of like, hey, let's move this, sell that. So I actually made quite a lot of money.
Yeah, that was really cool. Yeah.
I think I was able to get like close to like $1,000 back, just like selling some stuff.
Yeah.
And like just clearing things out. And oh man, it makes life so much easier.
Yeah. It's a flywheel effect, really. If you're able to just kind of like organize and tidy things up, because you feel less anxious because your house isn't your house isn't like a cluttered mess. You're able to focus on like the things that you actually do want to focus on. You don't spend money.
You're not following the trend.
Exactly,
because the trend right now is to consume.
Yeah, people want you to buy.
We're no longer customers. We're consumers.
Yeah,
that's something that I've posted on Twitter. I was like, 2017, because that's kind of what
the
process was, the year I stopped becoming a consumer and I started becoming a customer.
Yeah,
like that's good, man. I consume because like I want to.
Yeah,
because it brings value.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like I think moving really helped me too in terms of I was able to be like, what do I want to bring over? So I have three hoodies, like two sweatpants, like two pairs of jeans, and like two joggers, and like a couple sweaters and like a couple tees, and that's it. Like, because that's all I really need. Like, I don't really care. It's also about like what you care about, right?
Exactly.
So when it comes to clothing, like I don't care about like looking good. I just want to like be comfy and look like half decent. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because like I know there's other important things that I need to dedicate my time and resources and energy to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
because like appearance matters, but like to a point.
To
like,
a point, exactly. There's
a point where like that's all you care about.
Yeah.
And then it becomes distracting.
Exactly, man.
So I wanted to end off the podcast. I'm gonna ask you three questions.
Yeah, go for it.
You're gonna give me short answers, long answers, whatever you want.
Sweet.
They're gonna be random. So. What book has had the biggest impact on your life?
What book? Oh, man, that's pretty crazy.
You talked about Dale Carnegie's...
So How to Win Friends and Influence People definitely had an impact. I wouldn't say it had the biggest impact. Mm-hmm. I think there's a book called Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday.
Okay.
So there's just too many books in my head.
Choose one.
Okay, I'm going to go with a book called Radical Candor.
Okay.
And... the reason why I say that is because I feel like a lot of people would say like the two other books I would have chosen. So a lot of people already know about it. Mm-hmm. But I'm hoping by saying the book Radical Candor, people are introduced to it. Radical Candor is essentially, it's about like, you know, how to manage a team and how to manage people. But I think it does such a good job at teaching someone how to be confident by being authentic, and how to be just okay with giving someone feedback and being completely, completely candid with another person.
Okay.
That's
super useful.
Exactly. It speaks to it from from the perspective of like, professional setting, but I've applied it to like personal and everything. And I think ultimately it shows people that, you know, you don't have to lie to be empathetic. You don't have to lie to be compassionate, or you don't have to like be fake nice. Mm. If you genuinely do care about the other person, then you will give them good news, bad news, negative feedback, which should be constructive criticism realistically, no matter what, because you just want to see them do better. And I think that is a book that has drastically, like, I only read it like maybe 3 months ago.
Yeah.
But it's a book that's, you know, had like a pretty significant impact in terms of me being able to be more comfortable when I communicate with, whether it's, you know, my partner, whether it's with my friends or with my like creative people, with my family even. And it's just allowed me to take feedback in a much more constructive light. So I don't take it personal and I'm not offended.
That's big. Especially in today's day and age when people seem to be offended and take things
like exactly, personally. Exactly, man. Yeah.
That'd be a big book. I like how it's like you can tell the truth and be empathetic.
You can, yeah. And like just to give people who are listening a quick like tidbit. So there's like one notion, like there's one section in the book where it talks about, you know, let's say your colleague has, let's say, you know, John has his pants unzipped, like his fly's undone, right? So what would you do? Like, would you, you know, would you tell him straight up because you care about him? Mm-hmm. Would you not tell him because you're scared of what of what other people might think? Would you not tell him because you're scared that he might be embarrassed? Mm-hmm. Well, the right answer is you're actually hurting him if you don't tell him in any scenario. The best thing to do is, you know, is just to, like, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, grow some balls and tell him that his fly is undone, because that ultimately helps him and it helps you in a way too. Yeah, exactly. Right?
It gets it off your conscious.
Exactly. It's an awkward thing to do, but just do it. Yeah. Anyways, right?
So. That my grandmother on my dad's side was known for being pretty harsh.
Yeah.
Just very open, and she just spoke her mind, and people kind of gravitated towards her. Like one of her grandchildren, she goes, "Oh, this is a very ugly child." Like to her own grandchild.
Oh wow. Okay.
But she's taking care of it because she loves it no matter what. Yeah. Like it didn't change how she acted towards the child. She's just dating what it was.
Yeah.
It's ugly. Still my grandchild. Exactly. I still love it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's like, the book does a very good job in terms of like saying like, you have like when you give the feedback, it's also important that, or when you communicate with someone, it's also important that you tell them the why. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, for example, like if someone were to do like a shitty job at work or like deliver like a poor project, you tell them like, you know, I genuinely do care about you and, you know, you're like a very smart asset to the team and I know you can do better. So please just try to like deliver something better next time. And Steve Jobs will always say like, you know, your work is shit. He would never say like your shit, but he would say your work is shit because he knows that person can produce better. So he's actually doing them like a huge service by telling them that the work is shit because they obviously handed in because they were like, they either didn't believe in it or they're like, fuck, I just want to get this done. But by him giving that feedback, they're like, okay, I need to work harder on it. And I know, like, he essentially gave them confidence that they almost lost for a quick second.
He made them care as much as he does.
Exactly, yeah.
It's like kind of just like giving you my spirit energy of,
it is,
of,
yeah.
like, of confidence. I like that. So the second question is going to be, what do you hate?
Man, what do I hate? Oh, that's a good question. Man, what do I hate? What do I hate? I hate it when people settle for the way things are. Mm-hmm. Especially when change, like when a change can happen or improvements can be made. And I think that comes from a lot of what I've seen in terms of like, well, there's always like a better way to do something or like it's easy to do something better, but it's people's laziness and their own like ulterior motives that tends to stop stop them from making that change.
Mm-hmm. I get that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was my most irritating thing when I was playing basketball.
Yeah.
Because you actually win games in practice. As boring as it
yeah,
is,
yeah. You have to practice. Yeah.
You win games in practice because it gets rid of the second guessing.
Yep. And the jitters and
so stuff, when the moment happens, your body's almost on autopilot.
Yep.
So when people would mess around in practice, it would irritate me a lot.
That's interesting. Because it's like
in the game, you're gonna freestyle and you're gonna probably cause us to lose because you're gonna be nervous about what we actually should have been practicing. It Bill Belichick always says, "Do your job." That's your
job.
Yeah, your job is if your job is to be there on the right wing, be there at the right wing.
You have to put in work. Ultimately do have to put in work.
You have to put in the work in order to get the result.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Everyone thinks professional athletes like they're lucky. They actually gave up their childhood.
Yeah,
they have no childhood.
Yeah,
for this moment.
Have you seen I, Tonya?
I haven't seen it yet because someone said it's like it's like a bashed up knee that did her in, and I just
that doesn't interest you, it just grosses me out.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm queasy like that, like even thinking about I'm like, my knee.
But that movie, like from another perspective, it, like it really goes into like how like she had no childhood, like her whole childhood was robbed of her because she was just putting in work the whole time.
And that's the ultimate vulnerability.
Yeah,
because I think the odds of like becoming a professional athlete are like 1 in
20,000. It's pretty pretty small. So yeah, and even like lasting, sustaining it too.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And the confidence you have to have in order to
you got to build it up from a young age.
Yeah, exactly. That's the only way to make it. The final question: which person has had the biggest impact on your life and why?
Does it have to be someone I know?
Mm-hmm.
It could be anyone. Oh man, I think I kind of want to cheat and say like two people.
Cheat.
Okay. Number one, it's gonna sound really lame, but Kanye West. Oh, yes. I think he is like a good amalgamation of like everything like I value, which is, you know, this guy's creative as fuck. Like he doesn't let anything stop him. And he's unapologetically himself. He does not give a fuck. Like he is himself, and he's like authentic. Like, he doesn't care what people say. He doesn't care what people think. Like, he just does him, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great skill. Like, I think that's just, people call that like cockiness, confidence. They call it delusional. But I just, yo, he's just being him. Like, mm-hmm. who cares, right? Mm-hmm. Because the work, like, the proof is in the pudding. The guy's put out, like, shit, like, some incredible masterpiece albums. He's done, like, a fashion line. Like, you know, he's got the shoes. And now he's working on, like, a book.
He's consistent.
He's relatively consistent for the most part, right? And then the second person, I don't want to say that this person has changed my life, but it's more so the principles that they've put out that have had, like, a really positive impact on me is, so Austin Kleon, he's an author as well as an artist. And he has this book called Steal Like an Artist. And that is an incredible book. Your head's like nodding along with me right now. And it's an incredible book. So the whole idea that Austin Kleon is, you know, trying to put out into the world through this book is that no idea is original and everything is derivative of something else. So the way he says is, like, if you want to be creative, like, don't start from zero. Like, don't try to be too original, but find people who you admire, like, find people who are, like, you know, masters at their craft and what you're trying to excel at, and see what they do. Like, try to recreate it. And as you recreate it, like, the more and more you recreate it and more you mash up their works together, you're going to find your own unique style. Mm-hmm. And this is actually something that I actively do with, you know, like, I actively do it. And I know a lot of other photographers and creatives I spend my time with, I know they actively do it as well, is we'll look at, like, certain Instagram posts, certain, like, you know, things on, you know, like, Dribbble, Pinterest, things like that. And we will legitimately, like, just try to recreate it, you know, just try to, like, steal it in a way. Mm-hmm. And it works, because, like, most of the time, like, the results never end up exactly how the other person does it.
It's impossible.
Exactly. It's impossible, right? Because the variables are always different. So the output's never different, but the process is the same. And I think that's one thing that Austin Kleon, like, he's been really able to kind of, like, drive into my head, the importance of, is never try to, like, recreate someone's output, but eventually, like, just try to see what their process is and try to, like, adopt good processes and, like, good habits from, like, people. And then you'll just eventually, you know, like, you'll be a mastermind. It's almost like the cheat code,
yeah,
essentially, to creativity. Yeah. And I think Tim Ferriss does a really good job at that as well. Is he is just, he's like an amalgamation of, like, you know, he'll take, like, two or three best practices from Rick Rubin. He'll take, like, one best practice from, like, Naval Ravikant. He'll take, like, two best practices from, like, Carly Kloss. Just, like, all these people who are, like, masters at what they do. And he is just, like, he's, like, fucking Megatron. Like,
puts it together, exactly. Makes tools of Titan, and shares it with
everyone. Yeah, exactly. And that's what he is, right? Yeah. So I think, Kanye West and Austin Kleon, and I guess, like, asterisk, notable, honorable mention is Tim Ferriss, too.
Yeah, I think Tim Ferriss is everybody's... he's just a great guy.
Like, yeah.
He almost does all the research for you.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
Shares it. Yeah. I love that he shares every single detail.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's a confident person.
It is. Yeah.
He's giving you all the answers. Exactly. To the test.
He shares his morning routine.
Yeah.
He tells you, like, oh, these are, like, the supplements I take. Mm-hmm. This is, like, five things I always travel with. Like, yeah. The dude is like a walking cheat code.
That's yeah, what he is. He is.
He's a walking cheat code.
He is. So that's all for the podcast. I want everyone to just know where they can find you, where they can find your stuff. So where can they find you on Instagram, Twitter, Medium? What's your handle?
So my handle across everything is just VNSNK. So across Instagram, across Medium, Twitter as well. Just hit me up, VNSNK. If you're listening, if you're in Toronto, if you shoot photos, like, please, like, hit me up. Like, I'm always looking to, like, meet, like, other photographers in the city and just try to build, you know, because I went to an event a couple weeks ago and it was just really cool to see, like, all these, like, different creatives, like, photographers, filmmakers, writers from, like, different parts of the city. And, like, it was just cool to meet all these new people. And I realized, like, that's so important, is, like, supporting and collaborating mm-hmm. with one another. So please, like, if you're in Toronto and, like, you want to shoot, or if you just want to, like, chat or whatever, like, please hit me up.
Perfect.
VNSNK.
Perfect. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
No worries, man. Thanks for having me.
It means a lot. This is great. Yeah. All right. Peace.